so there's no chapter verse on that has to be your schedule, but that just illustrates
right
exactly what desiring the work of ministry is there in First Timothy 3. If you don't desire those things, those categories, those days, those all of those ministries, then ministry, specifically church planting, it's probably not the route you should go. Would be our suggestion here.
Yeah. You definitely don't. You don't want to do if you're a 9-to-5 person. You don't want people to bother you when you clock out and things like that. It's just really not the.
Sure.
It's not the role for you.
Sure. So that's one of the questions you would ask. You know, do you desire the work? But Dusty, you also have here that you must also ask, do you love Christ Church? Right. Mm-hmm. Do you love Christ Church? So tell me a little bit about that and why that is crucial and why that question must be answered before, you know, diving into church planting.
Yeah, I think men can be tempted to, so you go to seminary, there's a difference between enjoying learning theology and even enjoying preaching and loving Christ Church. And the difference is dramatic. We're called to love Christ first and foremost, and then therefore, based on that love, to love and feed and care for his sheep. If you don't love the church, that work of ministry is going to become very burdensome very fast. And so having a heart for a love for the church. So what I would tell a man that believes he has the desire for the work is I would ask him, in what ways are you right now, while you have no title and no job and no position in the church, in what ways right now are you living sacrificially towards Christ's church? And how are you serving and using your gifts as a volunteer? Whose life are you in the middle of to help, to love, to pray for, to care for? Are you living sacrificially towards Christ's church now? Because nothing magical happens to you when you gain the title pastor, associate pastor, elder at all. You're still the same guy. You just now have this responsibility that's laid on you that's a privilege and also a responsibility. So do you love Christ's church is really one of the top questions you have to answer, and not just can you say yes to that, but do you see evidence of it in your life?
Yeah, I appreciate what you said there. So it's not 0 to 100 in terms of I just attend a local church. I'm now full blown in pastoral ministry. You're saying if you believe that the Lord is driving you in that direction, and believe the Lord is calling you to pastoral ministry, that right now you can actually do something about that by loving Christ and his church and being plugged into the local church, which is excellent, right? So now after you've determined that you desire to do the work, you love Christ and his church, talk to me a little bit about, Dusty, talk to me about just having your giftedness in those things affirmed by others, right? I mean, if you desire to be in pastoral ministry, you know, in the Lord's providence, you need to be able to teach his word, right? You need to be gifted in both teaching and serving. So talk to me a little bit about practically how I sort of work through that.
Yeah. Well, when you look back at those qualifications in 1 Timothy 3, Titus 1, really the personal one is, do you desire the work? And then everything after that are things that must be affirmed by others. And it comes down to the broad categories of character and gifting. So can you need to be able to honestly say with a clear conscience that you meet the character qualifications and that you believe you're gifted, but that's not enough. You need, I would say if you're married, the affirmation of your wife also in that is huge. She lives most closely with you and sees you in ways that others do not. And so you ought to be humble enough and to listen to her and ask her, do you see any deficiencies in me in these areas? But then beyond that, godly men in your life, elders, pastors, they need to see your character and they need to see you in ministry and your giftedness, even in a volunteer capacity, to say, yes, we believe to the best of our ability that this is a man who's qualified in those ways. And that outside affirmation is, it's not just a good idea. It's part of what Paul tells Timothy is essential in 1 Timothy 3 and Titus and Titus 1. And so having determined that you desire the work, the next phase is I need to ask godly men their opinion on that in my life.
Right. And I think that's the importance of being able to seek out godly men that understand the scriptures, they understand the church, they themselves also have a love for Christ and his church, and they are willing to train up the next generation, and they are willing to also get involved in church planting, being a part of that type of church. So, I mean, what would you say for the lay person that desires to now get into pastoral ministry or to get into church planting, and they're not necessarily at a particular church that is moving in that direction, or maybe there's not necessarily godly and biblical leadership? Maybe I could frame it this way. Why is it important before being sent out, before being planted, that you sit under godly leadership in those things?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very helpful and needed to see a model of what is a healthy church. If I'm going to go pastor, whether it's planting or being just on staff at a church, I need to know, what am I doing? What does that work look like? What does it look like faithfully to shepherd God's people with the Word of God? What does it look like even to make a hospital visit in a way that's actually encouraging to someone, that builds them up? What does it look like to sit with a woman whose husband's just passed away? What do you say? How do you? So I think sitting with, even as a volunteer, if you know in your heart that you desire ministry, but maybe you're in a church where the leadership, for whatever reason, has not taken as much of a proactive approach towards training as they ought to, well, don't let that stop you. If they're godly men, go to them and say, hey, can we have lunch? Can I set up a meeting with you? Could I come in every Monday for an hour and just ask you some questions? I mean, I peppered Tom and Rocky with questions. I mean, when I was in seminary, I would just...
Yeah, they were ready to send you out.
They were like, he's got to go. Somebody's got to take him. I would just set up meetings and just show up and just ask, just take notes on, tell me about this, tell me about that. And so don't wait. I would say, if you genuinely feel you're gifted, don't wait for somebody to just magically know that. Find the godliest man you can in the church, and start meeting with them and asking them questions, and that will benefit you.
Yeah, that's helpful. And maybe, Dusty, you can talk about, look, it's seminary is very helpful. Investing time in theological books and studies is also very helpful. But even with that, there's really nothing compared to exactly what you're talking about, being able to sit under godly men. So what would your encouragement be, that balance between the seminary, the theological academic world, which is very helpful, right? Mm-hmm. We're pro those. I mean, yeah. You just taught a seminary course. I'm assuming that you are behind the seminary world, but sort of speak of the balance there of the academics, but also just church life, why it's crucial to have that church life aspect.
Yeah, I mean, that is the New Testament pattern that we see, of course. 2 Timothy 2:2, this is what Paul says ought to be done. Faithful men, identifying and training faithful men who can then train and teach faithful men. So what the seminary piece is a great addition to that. I would say it dovetails well with local church mentorship and training. But it's just not a replacement for it. And I would say, if only one of the two is available to you, choose the local church training. And there are nowadays, really, there's so many online ways to be trained in a formal sense. I would say, if you have a great local church with pastors who love you and they're pouring into you, and you can honestly say, if I end up being a pastor like this guy, I would be so thrilled. Don't leave that guy. Like that. Stay there, if at all possible. Have him pouring into you. Serve in any way that he will let you serve, and then get your education in one of these other ways. I would rather do that than move and go to a seminary, even if it's a solid seminary. But then kind of be, nobody knows you. It takes the 4 years you're in seminary for them really to get to know you and entrust you with ministry, and now you're done. They're both very important, but the local church ministry, in my mind, is essential.
Yeah, that's helpful. So with church planting, you would also argue that you should not go out on your own and plant a church. You would say that if you were being sent out, you need to be sent from a biblical healthy church? Now, why do you want to operate under that framework, and why is that helpful as opposed to me just going rogue and, you know, I'm leaving Countryside and I'm just starting my own church and there's really no support behind that? Why is it crucial that it's a church plant from a healthy biblical church?
Well, I think there's a one quick distinction I'll make is that the church may not be, maybe it's a smaller church or they're kind of tapped out in their resources in the sense, so they may not be able to support you financially. Mm-hmm. They may not even be able to send anybody with you. So I'm not saying that is absolutely essential. What I am saying is somebody needs to have affirmed your giftedness and be willing to send you out with their blessing in the sense at least that they're a spiritual support to you and that they affirm that you're called and gifted for this and ought to be doing this. I mean, and the biblical argument for that is Acts 13. If even Paul and Barnabas, I mean, one an apostle, and Barnabas was no slouch, right? Right. These are, he was an amazing man of God. If they would humble themselves to be sent out by a Gentile church, by the way, how can we say, well, I don't need that. You know, I'm good. I think, obviously, yes, Paul's missionary journeys were in some ways a special case, but I do think there's a principle there. Right. To say if Paul needed someone to lay hands on him and send him out and affirm him. And that also meant support, that we see him coming back to the church in Antioch, giving reports on what happened. That is a biblical concept, and I think it dovetails perfectly with the actual qualifications and how they are to be affirmed. A man must be tested, must be affirmed, and that's true whether you're staying in your church or going out. And it keeps you from the danger of just... The truth is, if you want to be a quote-unquote senior pastor, what's the fastest way to do that? Go plant a church and call yourself the senior pastor. But that's not a biblical way to do that.
That's helpful. So there's really no New Testament warrant to be untethered from the church. I mean, even in the cases, like you're saying, of the apostles, particularly the Apostle Paul, you know, in his unique case, right, as being an apostle. But the principle is still the same. There's an interconnectedness. They're always tethered to a local church. They're revisiting local churches, and they have the blessing of the local church, whether that be financially, or it's just an affirmation of that man's giftedness and those things. So, Dusty, thinking back to those beginning preparatory days as you were wrestling in your own heart about leaving Countryside and planning a church, and maybe even before that, you were married. You have kids. So let's maybe just talk about, you know, for the pastor that is gifted, that he has the support of the church and those things. He's under godly leadership. What does that look like for the family? Right. It's not just you and you alone, right? Going, but what does it look like for your wife? What does it look like for your kids? And what are some of those things that you guys had to work through as a couple and as a family?
Yeah. In the model of church planting that we have here, I'd say that's one of the hardest parts is just the fact that we love this church and the people of this church, which means not just me, but my wife, dear friends, family, really. I mean, we love these people like family to this day. And my kids as well. Were born here. They all their friends were here. So even though they were young, elementary school age, it was a massive shift.
Sure.
I would counsel any man desiring to do this not to drag his wife and children into this. They need to be on board. You need to lovingly shepherd them to be on board over time and be patient with that process and realize this is a big ask. This is not just my life that's being upended. It's my whole family's life in a way that's being upended. And so what does that mean? It means shepherding. So what's shepherding? It opening the word with them, praying with them. With the kids, we went through Acts at a high level because they were young. But I wanted them to see we're not doing something crazy that the church has never seen before. We're just seeking to do what the church has always done. And we get to be a part of that. And it doesn't mean we don't love our church or that something's wrong at our church. It's quite the opposite. And so it did help them, I believe, to see in the Bible the pattern for what we were seeking to do. And for my wife, it just looked like a lot of late night conversations of praying together and listening and really talking through why would we do this and what are the benefits. And I think when you're first faced with it, there's a temptation to be caught by the hard parts of it. And it's helpful then to turn that and say, yes, I'm not denying those, but let's talk about the benefits of it and what we would get to do if we do this. And I think as we begin to talk about the positive side of it, and that's where it's like, yeah, that the benefits outweigh the hard, and because this is such a worthwhile thing to do. And ultimately, that helped us get on the same page and both be mutually excited about it.
Yeah, I like what you said earlier, Dusty, just talking about, you know, exercising patience, you know, as these things are sort of welling up in your heart, and then you begin to communicate them to your wife. So, you know, what would be your thoughts or encouragements just in terms of maybe your wife happens not to be on board with the process or isn't maybe too eager about going down this route, but besides patience, right? You know, how would you sort of navigate that situation?
Yeah. Well, all the commands for husbands apply. So we're to nourish and cherish our wife. We are to love her as Christ loved the church, and we're to live with her in an understanding way. And particularly that last one, living with her in an understanding way means, not getting so, the real reality is I don't want to go if she's not with me. Like that, we're not going to go until we can come to and that's not saying I'm neglecting my leadership in the home. It is rather the character of my leadership in the home that, listen, I love you, and I do believe this is what God has called us to do. Therefore, I do believe we should consider this, but I want to do that with you. I'm not telling you from on high, so to speak, that we are doing this.
Right.
I want to hear your thoughts, and I want to consider your what are your fears? What are, you know, and I'm not put off, and I'm not challenged. I think as husbands, pastor or not, we can be challenged at times simply by our wife having concerns. She's our helpmate. Like, there are things that we may not see that she may say, like, let her be your helpmate. And so my encouragement would be, in that patience, have lots of conversation and truly be willing to listen to her concerns and think on them, pray on them, come back to her with, hey, I hear you on that, and here's how I think we can navigate that concern. And she will feel, Lord willing, cared for in that process and loved, instead of, this is what we're doing, I need you to get on board, and sort of dragging her along.
Yeah, and I think, you know, what we've talked about in this episode and sort of our biblical philosophy of church planning, because it's not a short process, right? I mean, you don't wake up one day and then, you know, 3 or 4 days later, this thing's up and running. But it is a long process, and during that time is a lot of time for us as pastors to grow. But like you're saying, it's an Ephesians 5 time where we can really love and shepherd and help our wives, you know, see where the Lord may be directing us. And, you know, I'm a firm believer that God raises up the man to do the shepherding and the pastoring, but, you know, when done right, God will also raise up the wife and family that will be able to stand alongside and minister as well, and where they're gifted in those things. So I think God has a unique way of doing that in life and ministry. I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
That's certainly been true in our life. I mean, my wife would tell you, it was at the time probably the hardest thing we have done because of the relationships that we had to say goodbye to in a sense. But both of us would say that we would not change a thing. We would do it again in a heartbeat. And he has, it's been very fun actually to see how he's equipped my wife and how instrumental she's been in my life personally.
Sure.
And in our church and our kids. The kids have grown tremendously through this, and I'm so thankful for God's kindness to do that.
Yeah, that's helpful. So, Dusty, you've already talked about just sort of some factors to consider when planting a church, right? Choosing a location and those things. So if we could just sort of go back and visit that just a little bit more, and the church plant world, what are some helpful things to consider when planning a church, whether that's somewhere locally or it's a few hours away, states away, or even another country? You know, I mean, how do you narrow down what you want to do, right?
Yeah.
What would be some principles to think of or to consider?
Sure. Well, there's value in all sorts of models. I mean, church revitalization is really important. I think that's a great model as well in certain cases. The church planting, being a part of an established church, sending someone overseas to plant churches, all of it is viable. I think what's key is really spending the time it takes to know the area that you're talking about planting in. I mean, I can't tell you how much driving, how many miles we put on the car, just going to these places, eating there, getting just rubbing shoulders with the people there. Every little pocket, even in DFW where all the cities kind of run together, each little area has its own kind of feel. And just kind of getting to know what are these people like? The people that move here, what are they like? And what would be a good fit for this area? What are the needs? So things like the more densely populated an area is, it makes sense then that the more churches you're going to need in that area, and they're going to have to be closer together. Because like countryside, even though it's a larger church, there's so many people in this area, it can't. The elders here, they can't possibly shepherd the population that really lives in even a 20-mile radius. And so it makes sense then with such a dense population like this, you may consider planting more close to the sending church than you would in a place like maybe Nebraska, where you've got a town, or even where I'm from in East Texas, really it's a town, long stretch of road, a town, long stretch of road.
right.
To where you may then say, let's plant in the next town over because of the population. Really, you know, we don't need to have another one right here on top of us, but the next town over does need a church. Also, like, I've spent a lot of time in the Dominican Republic overseas, and it's been interesting to see how this plays out culturally, too, because there in many places, it's not common to have a car. Not everyone has a car personally. And so a lot of their life is within walking distance of their home. So now we're talking about churches needing to be even closer together because they're not going to go. If they have to go 15 minutes by car to a church, that's like 2 hours away in their mind for our context. So as we think about international church planting, really being careful not to impose an American understanding of how a church plant ought to function in our culture on that culture, but doing the due diligence to learn what would really be a benefit here and what makes sense, how many churches need to be planted, what kind, what's an average size of a church, a healthy size of a church, and that can vary depending on the area that you're in.
So let's say you find that location. You're not going to go pastor nobody, right?
I mean,
you're praying that the Lord is going to provide a body of people to be there. So let's talk about this in two categories. First, you need godly men to go with you, right? And then you also need people, particularly from the church that is sending you out.
Yeah.
So you can talk about that. So let's, Dusty, first start about why it is crucial to have godly men that are not only qualified, right? 1 Timothy 3, Titus 1, but also have the same philosophy of ministry and vision, if you will, that you have.
Yeah, it's really important, even if those men are, I mean, in an ideal setting, I would say, if you can, if it's possible, send at least another elder or elder qualified man with the plant pastor. That's not always possible, though. And even if we see it in back to Titus 1:5, when Paul sends Titus there, obviously those were functioning churches that did not yet have a plurality of leadership, and that's why Titus went. So it's not unbiblical for a new church to have to start maybe with a single pastor. But it is unbiblical to just have a plan to stay that way.
Right.
So you need to immediately begin identifying faithful men and raising them up however long that takes.
So you either need to have elders or you're on a track or progression to have the godly leaders in the church.
Yeah, and hopefully there are going to be some men in that group that at least have the basic qualifications that you can begin to work with, and you just train whoever God brings you, wherever they're at, you start there and you just train. But that's crucial because you're going to need people. You cannot possibly disciple all the people, Lord willing, that are going to come. And so if you are there by yourself or have a group of only very new and immature believers, that makes for a very hard time. You know, fast growth in a church is exciting, and it's we like the idea of it, and it is exciting, but it also comes with immense challenges, because when you open your doors and you immediately almost double in size, you have now double the people who need discipleship, marriages that are struggling, some are lost, addicted to this or that. Like, they're all these shepherding issues just walked in the door. And if you don't have anybody that can help you disciple these people and love these people, it's going to be a real struggle. So even if you don't have elders, the point is having at least some mature believers whom you have invested in, whom you have confidence that they can help spread the load, even at a lay level, to love on some of these people. And you can't even practically have them all in your home for lunch, for example. So you need people that understand and have that same vision and philosophy that we're going together to reach this community, and we're all sacrificially going to pour into the people God brings to this church.
So yeah, so when you planted Northlake, about how many people came from Countryside? How many went with you from Countryside to Northlake?
So it's interesting. We, from the church, actually from the church, probably in the 160s range.
Okay.
But by the time we left the church, about 200, because as people heard about it, they already started attaching to the church. So we launched with 200, but not all of them were actually from Countryside. Some had already started to come that just knew we were planting.
Okay. Yeah. So what were some of the practical ways, you know, that you were able to, quote unquote, find people to go with you? Or, you know, I know some of that probably happened organically, but just take us through, you know, a snapshot of the practical process that you guys went through to be able to find people that had really the same heart and desire that you have to plant.
Well, over time, I mean, the elders had kind of, you know, dropped hints over the years that, hey, at some point we would like to plant a church. So the church was primed for the fact that that was something at some point we wanted to do. So that naturally leads people to speculate, well, who would pastor the church? And so as I was hearing things over the years, before I had even committed, so, you know, a handful of people would pop over and say, hey, if you know, if you ever did that, you know, we'd be interested to maybe do that with you. So, you know, you kind of have mentally this list of people who might be interested. So when it actually became time and the elders really did want to do this and asked if I would do this, with their blessing, I went to some of those people who had expressed those desires and said, hey, we are going to do this, and I am going to be the pastor. Would you like to come? Would you, we ask you to prayerfully consider it. Through that, what formed was a small group of men initially, of about six men, that were godly, faithful men from our church that I knew well, and we began to meet even before it was really publicly pushed in the church, because that was key to have men, like you said, from the beginning, even for the launch team that would come, that already knew what we were doing and had the same desires and heart. And that proved, those six couples or so that we poured into, most of whom are still at, not only at our church, but in great high levels of leadership, proved invaluable. And then once the launch team was identified, because it was announced and people then would come and say, hey, we want to be a part of this, we began to meet with the launch team, and those men that I had worked with were already ready to start doing like partners with people and getting that launch team ready to be able to pour into new people that might come.
Yeah. And then and that really got you guys rolling. You guys were meeting here on campus for how long? Did you guys meet here on campus?
So over the summer that year, we had like once a month we'd get together, and then in September I think we started meeting weekly for some training, and then in November technically the church started, and that was like our church, actual church service.
Sure. So there was a time you guys were meeting on campus here, and you guys then, you know, went out to the Northlake area and officially launched there, and you've been there ever since, 5.5 years, right? There was a time when you had to move to a different building, like you mentioned earlier, but you're there now, and you're thriving in terms of just being a healthy church, being faithful. So just sort of give me a broad sort of update about what's going on at Northlake and the growth that you've seen there, not just numerically, but just in terms of people being more like Christ, and maybe even the growth in the leadership that you have at the church, and talk about those things.
Yeah, I think that's what's most encouraging. You know, when you plant, and it's not a bad motive or anything, but typically it's like, hey, how many people are coming now? And that's exciting. You know, we started with 200. We have over 500 people now that are involved in the church. That's obviously very exciting. But what's really exciting is we have 5 elders now, where we started with just myself that was there. We have staff. Two other men are full-time on staff, and we have a couple ladies who are part-time doing administrative work. They're all a huge blessing, and I was able to do internships with both of those guys, XL internships. One of them's in seminary here. The other's finishing ACBC training. It's just fun
sure.
to see them grow and the church benefit from their ministry. Men have been raised up who can teach. Women have been raised up who can teach women. The ministries of the church are growing in depth as people are saying, my life is changing. My marriage is changed. I'm not the same. I'm in the Word in ways that I've never been before. And I mean, that's the stuff that gets you out of bed in the morning. It's just exciting to see discipleship happening, fellowship happening, evangelism happening. And so, yeah, there's a lot of fruit, and just the Word doing its work, God doing his work through the Word.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So Dusty, tell me a little bit about what is happening at Northlake on the Lord's Day. What is offered on the Lord's Day, and what does that look like for you? And is that something that's changed since you first planted, or is that generally the same now, just in terms of what is happening at Northlake on Sunday mornings?
It's fundamentally pretty much the same as it was when we began, other than now we have 2 services.
Sure.
And so I personally, it was a change because I led the worship initially as well as taught, which is something I'd love to do. I enjoy doing.
Yeah. So we didn't mention that too, but not only are you, pastoring, leading the church, preaching the Word on Sunday mornings, there was a time, how many years of this 5.5 or even more?
I stopped when we went to 2 services about a year ago.
Okay. The Lord provided.
The Lord provided. And,
okay.
You know, I do miss it, but not as much as I enjoy the focus of being able to focus on
sure.
preaching. So that's been a huge benefit. And God's raising up even more musicians now. We actually don't have a paid on staff worship leader. We have a lot of volunteers who are very gifted and willing.
Yeah, what a way to serve.
It's
right.
awesome. So right. we're thankful for that. So that's different, but we have, our Equip class, which goes, our adult Sunday school, we call it
Equip. Tell me about Equip.
As we have our service, also there'll be an Equip class. There'll be youth first hour. They have their own Sunday school class where they're teaching through the Word. And then what we call NBC Kids, it's our kids program. It happens both services.
Sure.
Equip happens both services. And then I'm just teaching expositionally through Hebrews. We're nearing the end of Hebrews. We're in chapter 13.
How long you been in Hebrews? I've got to ask.
I've been some following. Time. Yeah, yeah. I need to go back actually and see how long it's been, but it's
right.
been a while.
Yeah. 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 My point in asking you about just sort of the progression, right? I mean, you've got the regulative principle of worship, those things that are absolutely foundational to corporate
yeah.
worship, which you've been doing from the beginning. But my point in asking was there was a slow progression of being able to add mm-hmm. certain ministries, and as the Lord has
yeah.
brought people, specifically men, to lead and teach the Equip class mm-hmm. and those things. So it goes back to that patience factor that you're talking about. This isn't all going to happen overnight, but church planting really is. And you can speak to it more than I can. It's just,
yeah.
it's sort of a patience game, right?
It is one of the things you have to watch out for when you plant, especially if you plant from a larger church that is able to offer a lot of ministries. People, you have to really temper their expectations on the launch team and your own expectations to say, listen, we love our sending church. We love all their ministries. Practically, yeah. we cannot yep. replicate them all. So what we're going to do is do the key core ministries that we must do, and we're going to do them with excellence to the best of our ability. And as the Lord provides us resources and people, we will gradually add ministries.
Yeah, that's helpful. So, yeah, so what do you have during the week, Dusty? So you've got all that going on Sunday. During the week, what are some of the official ministries that you have now?
So we have a men's discipleship that meets on Thursday mornings most weeks. We have a what we call WOW, Women of the Word. It's like Titus 2 here at Countryside that meets monthly for the ladies. And then we have small groups that meet throughout the week. We encourage all of our members to be in a small group if possible. It's a great way, especially as a church plant, without a facility midweek, to make sure there's a touch point that you are involved in something midweek. And those have been a huge blessing to our church. Of course, youth ministry meets midweek. We have local outreach that we do monthly that people can be involved in, sharing the gospel and different things in the community. A lot of that is actually picked up in the last year or so, being able to add some of those things. And it took time. When we started, we didn't have all of those things. They have progressed over time.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. So the church planting, at least in terms of solidifying a location, you know, that is done. You guys are in Northlake by God's grace and His providence. But some aspects of the church planting are still going. So you guys aren't in... You are in a building, right? You're
right.
Meeting at a school right now as a temporary space, and overall that's been helpful. But now you mentioned earlier you guys have weekly meetings about the church building and sort of what's on the horizon. So yeah, maybe you could just talk about that has to have been challenging thinking about those things. Aren't not only you pastoring and shepherding, but we're looking at a building and a campus and all of these things. So tell me a little bit about that journey and then sort of project forward at what's coming here in the future.
Yeah, so the building of a building is no small task.
did you learn those things? Was there a class on that in seminary?
There is not a class at all on that. And so there's a lot of things you find out there's not a class for.
Forthcoming book, right?
that's one of them. So I'll say it's been a joy. It's been a fun process,
sure.
But it's been a lot of work.
Yeah,
like for years, really since we started. From the beginning, we started the very early stages of what do we want to build and all that. And then in the last 2 years, particularly, it's been pretty all hands on deck, working behind the scenes, drawing all the stuff that's got to happen, meeting with ministry leaders, and so. It is quite the task, but it's fun to see it coming together. I think it is very important to have a building because it gives you a lasting foothold in that community. And in the minds of a lot of people, they're just not sure you're really around forever if you're in a school.
Sure.
And so to have the privilege of having a building, which we hope to break ground in the next month or so, and then be in it, in the spring of next year would be great, spring or summer. Then I think that's going to be a great milestone for our church. Because as I've told them from the beginning, look, we're hoping to build a church by God's grace that's far outlives us.
Right.
We want this to be here when Christ returns, however long that is. And that's going to mean we can't stay in a school as comfortable as it can be. Honestly, it's a great school.
Right.
It's a real nice facility.
It is.
But it's not a forever home.
Right. Right. Well, Dusty, I'm grateful for you and your commitment to the church planting world and the wonderful truths that you hold to, the biblical convictions that you have as, you know, carrying out the Great Commission in Matthew 28. And it's been a joy just hearing you talk about those things. And on the other side of that, it's been great just to get sort of a practical, experiential aspect of church planting, because you've been in that world for quite some time now. We're grateful that you continue to be faithful, the elders that the Lord has raised up there at Northlake as well. And of course, we love you guys out there.
So,
for our listeners, you know, if you're ever in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, of course, first come to Countryside, but then if you can make it out to Northlake for the Lord's Day, it would be a blessing. I'm sure Dusty would love to chat with you afterwards
and
those things. So, Dusty, any final words of encouragement or any thoughts that you'd like to sort of send us off with as we just wrap up our conversation here about church planting?
Yeah, I think I hope it's a helpful reminder, as it is to me, to always keep before us to live on mission, whatever church context you're in, and to take the Great Commission seriously, and that should shape our lives, and it should drive us to be deeply embedded in a local church, ministering to those people as well as sharing the gospel outside the walls of the church.
Right. That's wonderful. Well, Dusty, I look forward to having you back on the podcast soon, brother, and I'm grateful for you being here today.
Thanks for having me. Yeah.